If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56david.com. Atlantic Coast Mortgage, Equal Housing Lender, NMLS 643-114.
Hi, John Landecker, 7 minutes after 7 on 720 WGN. Yeah, we're going to outer space. Rod Pyle is with us, one of the great guests. This guy knows his stuff. Editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine, host of the podcast This Week in Space, which is on Spotify, Google, and any other place they do that kind of podcasting stuff. How are you, Rod?
I'm good. How are you, John?
I'm doing well, thank you. I know that there are some specific things, such as the mega rocket and the lunar lander that we're going to talk about, but I'd like to get your input on the story of the American astronauts up on the space station coexisting with the Russian cosmonauts and the idea that our people would come back on their ship. Have I got that right?
Yeah, and... So, as you know, things are tense on the ground. This isn't the first time. I mean, we had the annexation of Ukraine, which is the invasion of Crimea, which is, you know, it's an invasion. It's an act of war, but they called it an annexation in 2014. And it was a little tense then, but ground control in Houston and in Russia got along fine, and the astronauts and cosmonauts got along fine through that. Actually, remarkably so. I mean, you'd expect a little bit of cold shouldering going on, but reportedly there was none. Of course, you know, we might not hear everything. There might have been a few words. So what we've been hearing recently, and my co-host on the podcast is a guy named Tariq Malik, who's the executive editor over at space.com. So I get lots of, you know, minute-by-minute stuff from him that I might not otherwise hear. And apparently things are actually going fine. The expectation was that the Russians would sort of pull back into their module and the Americans would pull back into their side because the station, the main habitation area, is kind of divided into those two halves. Mm-hmm. But apparently that it had, there's been some of that, but not as much as you'd expect. And fortunately, unlike many years past, they don't carry firearms in the Soyuz anymore. So no risk of that problem.
I had heard a statement from a Russian space official that said the United States astronauts are going to have to fly on a broom to come back to Earth.
Yeah. To which Elon Musk put one of his big glorious rockets in a tweet and said, "Here's the broomstick." What he should have added is, "You know where to put it." Sorry.
That's okay. No.
Yeah, I mean... And this is the same guy, Rogozin, who's not a space engineer. He's not a former cosmonaut. He's a politico you know, nominally in charge of their space agency. He's an embarrassment to them, and even some of them think so, who a few years ago said, you know, "Hey, if you're going to cancel your shuttle and not pay us the money we want to fly up on our Soyuz, you can buy a trampoline." So he's got a big mouth. You know, he's in Putin's pocket. He's part of that cabal.
Oh yeah,
and who knows how long he'll last? But yeah, he's constantly kind of trying to stick it to NASA, and the Soviet Union had a pretty amazing space program, and as you know, they were ahead of us in the early days. Then we pulled past them with Apollo, but they kept doing pretty amazing stuff with space stations and so forth. For the last 10-15 years, they've been in continuous decline. Their budget's about $2.5 billion a year, which is a tenth of ours. And, you know, in a lot of cases, this stuff doesn't work very well. They've had a lot of problems. So all he can do is pound his chest and say nasty things because they don't have a lot to stand on at the moment.
At 720 WGN, I'm John Landecker. If this guest sounds familiar, that's because we try to get Rod Pyle on as often as possible when there's any kind of developments in space or on Earth relating to space. He's, as I say, editor-in-chief of Ad Astra Magazine. And there's the mega rocket, and there's the lunar lander, and we're going to have to take a break in about 3 minutes or so. Okay. And I'm a little disappointed in myself that I didn't read over this earlier, because we could have, as I understand, listened in to a press conference today with the astronauts or someone from NASA.
Oh, you're not missing a lot. That's a press conference about the first commercial launch is going up in about 2 weeks. That'll deliver all paid astronauts to the space station. but it's not a huge breaking news story. Okay. We can cover that in a week or two if you want.
Oh, no, that's fine. I just saw this link, and I'm like, well, that might have been interesting, but if you say no, I'm glad I didn't bother. So,
well, it's all interesting. It's
of course.
A question of how urgent
what am I saying?
It is, right?
Right, of course. What am I saying? What am I thinking? All right, the NASA mega rocket. What do you got?
Yes. Okay, Space Launch System, or as the WAGs like to call it, the Senate Launch System, due to its ongoing funding for roughly 20 years. The new moon rocket rolled out of the Vehicle Assembly Building last week to do its four-mile drive out to the launch pad, Pad 39B, which takes 11 hours. So we had photographers there for the magazine. Space.com had their photographers. Everybody had their photographers. And it's the first time we've seen a moon rocket come out of that building since 1972, when Apollo 17 rolled out. A little shorter than the Saturn V, different design. Interestingly, you know, NASA, because the public loves numbers, NASA likes to put out lots of numbers, and at 8.5 roughly million pounds of thrust, it's nominally more powerful than the Saturn V was, but it can't lift as much to the moon, which is kind of weird. It leaves you scratching your head, but the reason is it's a very different design. Saturn V had three stages plus a rocket on the back of the Apollo capsule. This one has one big stage with two strap-on rockets, and then a very small rocket on the back of the Orion capsule. So the net effect is, at least for the first version, it won't be able to lift as much of the moon as the Saturn V did, but they're going to upgrade it as they go along, and it'll be able to carry more. But you know what? I just want it to work. I want us to get back in the moon game. That'd be really cool.
What kind of payload would it be carrying?
So for this flight, they're rolling it out to test it now, so they'll fuel it up and run all their ground tests to make sure that everything works like it's supposed to, and then they detank it and roll it back in the storage building. They'll give it one last look over, and then probably launch, I'm guessing, in June. That's going to be an uncrewed flight that's just going to go out, orbit the moon, and then come back, but it's like 2 to 3 weeks of that. So testing of everything, and we can talk about that more when we come back if you want. And then in hopefully 2023, they'll launch a crew to orbit the moon and come home. And then hopefully by 2026 or 27, we'll have our first landing in somebody's lander.
Yes. There's a billion-dollar question.
Yes. <That's>, at least.
It's 720 WGN, Rod Pyle from Ad Astra Magazine, host of This Week in Space, a new podcast available wherever pods are casted, so to speak. Everybody should have one, don't you think? Don't you think?
A pod, at least.
A pod, yeah. That would be very space-like. So,
by the way, the theme music for Lost in Space you just played, I think we may have discussed this before. Do you remember who composed that?
Well, if we discussed it before, it's not surprising that I don't remember. No.
Well, me neither. John Williams.
Wow.
Star Wars and...
Oh, sure. Raiders of the Lost Ark
and all that.
Yeah. Very prolific.
Not one of his better moments, but, you know.
Oh, I don't
know. It was
fun
when you were a kid.
But who knew at that time, right? I mean.
Well, the music was the best part of the show, so you got to give him credit for that.
So let's talk about this. Now, do I understand that the lunar lander contracts are a bone of contention between some people who are in the business of sending things up to the moon, he said?
So a couple of years ago, NASA said, okay, everybody, come compete to get some research money for a new lunar landing system. Mm-hmm. So three entities, SpaceX, Blue Origin's so-called national team, which is them, Northrop Grumman. Grumman built the original lunar lander, and another company. And then a third entity, whose name is escaping me at the moment, all bid and got research money. So they developed their proposals. So a year later, Blue Origin comes back with a very expensive one. I think it was $30 billion or $29 billion or something. SpaceX comes back at about half, and the third company submitted their bid. And suddenly, at the same time, Congress says, hey, NASA, you know what? We're not going to give you as much money as we said. Deal with it. So NASA turns back to everybody and says, look, we only got enough money to hire one of you. And SpaceX is the only one that came in at a price we could afford. So SpaceX, you get the first year contract to go into development, start bending metal. Well, Blue Origin, Jeff Bezos start screaming, that's not fair, and you didn't give us a chance to do a second bid and all this stuff, which is mostly malarkey. You know, there's a couple of points that you might argue are relevant, but mostly not. It was just sour grapes. So they first took it to the, I think it was the Office of the Inspector General or the OAG, one of those, and said, we're pissed off, fix it. And the government said, you know, sat on it for a couple of months and said, nah, this is not going to fly. So then they take it, Blue Origin takes it to federal court, says, we're going to sue. And sits there for another few months, the federal court says, no, you're not. So SpaceX emerges victorious, but has now been sitting on their hands for 6 months because you got to stop work while any litigation or protests are going on. So at this point, SpaceX is supposed to build the first lander. And the weirdness of this is we still use the SLS, the Orion capsule, to fly the astronauts out to lunar orbit, where that little tiny four-person capsule docks with the enormous space starship, which could handle like 60 people if they wanted to. So they sit up at the top of that, and that lands them on the moon, and they do their thing, and then get in it, come back up to lunar orbit, dock with the Orion capsule, and come home. Part of that, because at that point, we don't think that SpaceX's system will necessarily be ready to be ferrying people back and forth to the surface of the Earth safely. But a lot of it's because Congress says you got to use the mega rocket and the capsule because we paid $30 billion to build it. So there.
Yeah.
So at the same time, we're hoping that Blue Origin or another entity, but probably Blue Origin as partners, will get the contract with new one comes up, so the RFPs just come out so people can start bidding. So we'll have two systems, so they're competitive, and in case one breaks and we got a problem where it can't fly for a while, the other one can still get us to the moon and back. So that's what's going on.
So let me go back over this and see if I've got this right. We've basically got a who's got a bigger rocket envy going on between Bezos and
Musk.
That's what it sounds like anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of a look at my big swinging rocket kind of moment there.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
Now, you know, if you're going to be literal about it, Elon's got a bigger rocket because Starship is immense, and the system that Blue Origin and the other companies are designing look a lot more like what Apollo used, you know, kind of a spindly, only flies outside the atmosphere thing. But they both have their uses. They both have their strengths and weaknesses. One of the downsides of the SpaceX system is once it's up in Earth orbit, it's got to be refueled a bunch of times before it can go out and do the lunar landing. On the other hand, it can carry like between 100 and 150 tons of lunar surface as opposed to, you know, 10 or something like the other one. So it just depends on what you want. Interestingly, you know, this we need at least two suppliers thing was also what was supposed to happen with the private companies taking astronauts up the space station. If you remember, it was supposed to be SpaceX and Boeing. SpaceX has been doing it for a couple of years now. Boeing is still trying to get their capsule to work, and it's like years and years behind schedule, and their first test flight failed to operate properly, and the second one didn't even launch because they were having problems on the ground. So at this point, we don't know if they're ever going to do it. I mean, they offered to refly it at their own cost, but, you know, it's getting late in the game.
Speaking of cost, the tab for these, Bezos and Musk, they're putting up their own money, right?
It's a combination. They get money from the NASA contract, but a lot of the development and early study money came from them, and both have kind of implemented this sliding scale of, okay, NASA, give us this much and I'll make up the rest. You know, these days, the good part for the taxpayer is these are fixed price. So if we say, SpaceX, we're going to give you $6 billion to develop this to the first iteration of it, and they say, okay, they got to do it or come up with a real good reason why they need more. Whereas in the past, during the Apollo program, the shuttle program, you would let these contracts, or SLS, frankly, you would let these contracts to these major aerospace contractors like Boeing and Lockheed and so forth.
Yeah.
They're called cost plus. So they'd charge whatever they got to charge and then keep marking it up. And that's why things escalated to sometimes double or triple what they were supposed to be. Well, that's why SLS is going to be so expensive still.
How expensive?
$2 billion with a B per launch, which is more than the shuttle it's replacing.
Wow.
And the total they've spent so far is $23 billion, which doesn't include the additional launch costs. So while it's cheaper than the Saturn V was in adjusted dollars, not much.
So do these space people, NASA and Musk and Bezos, do they face the same problems that you and I do with, like, supply chain? Or do they just get all the stuff they need all the time, no matter what?
Well, NASA buys everything from contractors, except for some stuff that JPL builds and some stuff out at the Marshall Center. They contract almost everything. SpaceX is interesting because they're vertically integrated. So other than some chips, they're pretty much building or prime sourcing everything. So they've got a lot of control. And the chips that fly in spacecraft are pretty old designs, so you're not looking for the latest bleeding edge stuff.
Huh.
The other companies may face some issues with that, particularly on the electronics side. And, I haven't actually checked, but now that you mention it, there may have been some, in terms of some of the mm-hmm. rare earth elements and stuff,
right.
I think most of them come from China. And with these problems we're having with Russia and China, that could be an issue, too.
Wow.
Yeah.
We're talking and about ready to wrap it up with Rod Pyle, who's the editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine and has a new podcast called This Week in Space. And I saw one headline. I hope I remember this correctly. There are how many worlds out there? 5,000? Is that something?
Oh, exoplanets?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just confirmed they're 5,000.
5,000 what?
Now, the question is how, 5,000 exoplanets that I believe... the question is always, is it just another planet out there, or is it Earth-like? And I don't think these are specifically Earth-like ones. And when we say Earth-like, it can be twice as big as the Earth and have a very different atmosphere, but it's a terrestrial planet, so it's rocky, and we don't know what the atmospheres are on most of them, and we're not going to know until the web is functional. Then we'll be able to start getting shots of the spectra of these things, and it'll tell you some of what's in the atmosphere, so we'll have a better idea. But yeah, they're just knocking them dead, man, because 20 years ago we hadn't seen any.
Who went out there and counted them?
There's a couple of space telescopes. One was called TESS, and then before that there was the Spitzer, and they look at them by indirect evidence. It's very spooky how they do it, but it's a real Sherlock Holmes endeavor.
Rod, thank you so much for being with us. Ad Astra magazine,
thank you.
This Week in Space podcast. Hope to talk to you again in the future as we continue into space. Thanks for being with us.